And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Greg Gabriel, chief of the Penticton Indian Band, was woken in the early hours by an employee and told that the local church was on fire. By the time I got there, the church was pretty much burnt to the ground, Gabriel, 69, said. There's a lot of mixed emotions. The church was a fixture in our community since 1911. The Sacred Heart in southern British Columbia is one of at least 8 churches in Canada to go up in flames in the past couple of weeks after the discoveries of hundreds of children's bodies at former church-run Indigenous residential schools. As the country marked Canada Day on July the 1st, protesters in the province of Manitoba toppled a statue of Queen Victoria, who was on the throne at the time of Canadian Confederation. A smaller statue of Queen Elizabeth was also toppled. One man was arrested by police. The remains of 751 people, mainly Indigenous children, have been found in unmarked graves on the site of a former Catholic residential school in Canada. They were discovered on the grounds of the Marieval Indian Residential School in Saskatchewan less than a month after the bodies of 215 children were uncovered on the site of another defunct Catholic school at Kamloops in British Columbia. The grim discovery sent renewed shockwaves throughout a country which is still coming to terms with evidence of widespread abuse of the country's Indigenous population revealed by the Kamloops mass grave. Canada's 1.7 million Indigenous citizens represent 4.9% of the total population, and their historic treatment is seen as a scar on the country's history. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he was deeply saddened by the discovery of the unmarked graves. He told the country's Indigenous population that "the hurt and the trauma that you feel is Canada's responsibility to bear." It is unclear how many of the bodies found in Saskatchewan belong to children, Cowessi's First Nation chief Cadmus Delorme said. The Cowessi's First Nation commissioned a ground-penetrating search of the site within days of the Kamloops discovery. Identifying the remains have been made more difficult by the removal of headstones by the church which ran the school. Families were threatened with jail if they did not surrender their children to the schools where conditions were grim. There were also allegations of malnutrition, physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Thousands of children went missing from the schools. Some died, others just ran away. Initially, it was estimated that 4,100 children disappeared from the schools. Murray Sinclair, an Indigenous former judge who led the commission, estimated that the true number could exceed 10,000. Canada will be known as a nation who tried to exterminate the First Nations, said Bobby Cameron, chief of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations, which represents 74 First Nations in Saskatchewan. Now we have the evidence, this is just the beginning. 2 hours after the fire at Sacred Heart in Penticton, a second blaze was reported 25 miles away at St. Gregory's Church near Oliver, British Columbia. Liquid accelerants were discovered at the scene. Then 2 more Catholic churches in rural British Columbia were burnt down, as did a disused Anglican church. The church is gone. All I could see were ashes, ruins, rubbles. How could that be? Sylvester Obi Ibekwe, chief priest of the Catholic parishes of Penticton, wrote in a message to parishioners, "I feel helpless and powerless." Fires have destroyed churches in the Northwest Territories and the eastern province of Nova Scotia. All the blazes were on Indigenous lands until last Wednesday when the St. John Baptist Catholic Church north of Edmonton in Alberta was engulfed by flames, prompting condemnation from Indigenous leaders, politicians and police. "This is not the way to go," said Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister. "The destruction of places of worship is unacceptable and it must stop," he said. Alberta's Premier, Jason Kenney, called the Edmonton blaze a violent hate crime targeting the Catholic community. The discovery of 215 children remains at the Kamloops Indian Residential School last month tore open old wounds and prompted a national reckoning on historic mistreatment of Indigenous people. "I truly believe that they were deliberately set, and it could be out of the anger that some people are experiencing because of the horrific finds of those children's graves," said Gabriel, who called the blazes an irresponsible act that put nearby homes at extreme risk. Trudeau, whose father Pierre was Prime Minister between 1968 and 1979 when the policy was in effect, has apologised and pledged £15.8 million to help find other remains. For many, however, contrition is not enough. Today, many Indigenous people lack clean drinking water, while alcohol and drug addiction on reserves is at epidemic levels, prompting calls for genuine action. The Church, meanwhile, has refused to apologise, although the Pope will meet survivors at the Vatican in December. To find these graves and to think of the horrific end to these children's lives, that absolutely angers me, says Gabriel. Apologies are far too easy, and I certainly won't accept an apology. I want action. He attended the Indigenous Day School that sat adjacent to the Sacred Heart Church. Although it wasn't as bad as the residential school system, we still suffered abuse, he said. The fires mirror a string of blazes in the late 1940s when Indigenous children allegedly burnt down residential schools as a form of resistance. Staff Sergeant Janelle Schoett of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in British Columbia said the force could not yet connect the fires to the residential school discoveries, although it was certainly alive to that as a possibility. We would not want to see anybody to be held criminally responsible for trying to have their voice heard, she said, so vigilantism is not the means by which to have your loudest voice. Supporters of an embattled Oxford dean have launched a new campaign to save his career after a world-renowned mediator walked out on dispute talks. The very Reverend Martin Percy, who presides over Christchurch College and Cathedral, has been embroiled in a four-year-long row with fellow Oxford dons over his tenure. The dean was suspended in 2018 over his alleged misconduct in a pay dispute and was fully exonerated in 2019 by an internal tribunal conducted by a retired judge. However, the feud continued. A new tribunal, scheduled for later this year, will hear a claim of harassment by a woman who alleges that Percy stroked her hair in the college's cathedral sacristy, an allegation which he denies. Last week it emerged that Bill Marsh, an award-winning mediator who had resolved disputes in the Middle East and Ireland and who was named 2019 Mediator of the Year by Who's Who Legal, wrote to Christchurch's governing body to say he had ended the mediation process between it and the dean after almost a year of talks. Even Mr. Marsh, who had been appointed to lead the talks by the Charity Commission, had to admit defeat in trying to find a solution to the Christchurch feud with its dean, his supporters claim. In the wake of the mediation talks collapsing and the enormous emotional toll the row has taken on him, it can now be reported that a coalition of the dean's friends and supporters are on Monday launching a website in a bid to salvage his career and reputation. The website, www.turbulentpriest.net, collates all documents and press cuttings covering the row over the past few years so that people can see for themselves what's been going on. It's being launched alongside a campaigning Twitter account, TurbPriestOxen. The documents included those related to the Tribunals, Clergy Disciplinary Measure, CDM, and the Church of England National Safeguarding Team throwing out the case. Deborah Loudon, 66, a former HR director at the Home Office and Ministry of Defence, who has experience of investigating harassment allegations, is among those supporting the dean. She said that when she first talked to the dean about his case, she was appalled at how it was being handled. At the beginning, I assumed the situation just needed someone sensible to sort it all out, and then I realised genuinely it was a conspiracy against him. The college had decided they wanted to get rid of him and failed, and then they were unwilling and unable to go back and admit to themselves and the world that they were wrong. She and her husband, Professor Henry Woodhouse, rector of Lincoln College, Oxford, are part of a group of Oxford friends who have been supporting the dean along with many others, including alumni, college staff and undergraduates, who are concerned about his treatment by the college. She added, "He's a good and reforming dean, and they realised they had appointed someone who didn't fit with them. The old guard at the college realised they'd made a mistake and wanted to be rid of him, and then they got caught up in their own agenda and it became impossible to undo." Speaking about the impact that the row has had on the dean, she added, "I think the exceptional and emotional toll has been enormous for him and his wife, and they are still suffering. You can see it. Although in a way I think the support of their friends has been of enormous importance to him as he realises he's not mad after all. because you start to question yourself and your own sanity in a situation like this. The college has admitted spending more than £1 million in legal and PR costs in its 2019 attempt to oust Percy, although that figure will be much higher now. A spokesman for the college said, "Christchurch unequivocally condemns sexual harassment in any form. When a student, who is also an employee of Christchurch, made an allegation of sexual harassment against the dean in October 2020, we followed our formal internal processes. It is important that every member of our community has the right to come forward and make such a complaint. Christchurch is a charity, a college, a cathedral, and a school with responsibility for young people, staff, children, and other beneficiaries will always treat such an allegation with the utmost seriousness. There have been attempts to suggest that this allegation is connected to historic matters at Christchurch. There is no truth in this, and to suggest otherwise is an insult to the complainant. We continue to be appalled at attempts to discredit the complainant, question her motives, and to prejudice the proper process. For the sake of all concerned, including the complainant, the respondent, and everyone within our community, we would repeat that the tribunal should now be allowed to take place and reach a conclusion without further external pressure." The Church of England's future is threatened by lack of clergy. According to the Archbishop of York, despite leaked plans revealing a move to cut the number of rural vicars. Giving his opening presidential address to the General Synod last week, the Most Reverend Stephen Cottrell said that a shortage of clergy would hinder the advancement of the church. His comments come amid fears that the parish church is in danger of collapse in rural communities. Last year, the Telegraph reported that rural parishes are struggling to pay their vicars, with clergy and wardens urging the Archbishop of Canterbury to act now to save the village church. Just weeks later, in January, an internal church document suggested that the coronavirus pandemic has provided an opportunity for radical change, and that could result in the loss of the parish council church model was leaked. However, the Archbishop, who is leading vision and strategy, the Church's plans for how to remain sustainable, is now facing criticism from angry parishioners after calling for increased clergy numbers despite the recently leaked documents suggesting he plans to cut them. Speaking before the General Synod, the Church of England's legislative body, he thanked clergy and lay leaders for their faithfulness and perseverance in difficult times, adding that he was deeply, deeply sorry if anything has been said from the centre ever caused anyone to doubt this. Apparently, in some quarters, it has been suggested that somehow clergy are a limiting factor on church growth. "I think I want to agree. A shortage of clergy would really limit us. We need more vocations. That is my prayer. Priests to serve a priestly people. It is the vision given to us in the ordinal. It is also at the heart of the vision and strategy we will discuss on Monday. That, centred in Christ, the parish system of the Church of England will be revitalised in such a way we will all discover the part we have to play in God's mission and find new ways of serving our nation with the gospel. And, of course, it will come under the oversight of bishops, shared with incumbents." In response to his comments, parishioners across the country have insisted that the Archbishop is dooming the parishes to failure after angry parishioners pointed to plans outlined in the leaked document. "What people want are properly trained, properly resourced clergy," one said. "The turkeys won't be voting for Christmas." The parishioner, who did not want to be named, added, "The Archbishop's apology is one of those, if anyone has ever been offended, apologies. Churches can run themselves like they used to if you don't despoil them of their assets and strangle the life out of them. Some will go wrong, but you need to trust and enable people. There is no trust in the diocese. No one loves the diocese. They love their local priest, sometimes, and their local church." Another added, "There is an arrogant elite at the top of the church, which is death to the loyal volunteers. It sometimes feels like banging your head against a brick wall." The leaked internal church report, sent to 42 diocesan secretaries and entitled Money, People and Buildings, warned that up to 20% of regular worshippers may never return, and questions the sustainability of many local churches, as well as the continued financial subsidy given to 5,000 loss-making parishes out of the total of 12,000. It also said that most dioceses can tend to prune the number of clergy and diocesan staff amid fears that the number of paid priests could be cut by up to 20% and replaced with volunteer clergy. In response to the criticism, the Archbishop said, "I stand by my statement that we need more clergy and we are working to that end. What is needed is faithful witness to the gospel, generous giving, and then we will be able to support the church in every parish and also start new churches." A border stone laid by Emperor Claudius almost 2,000 years ago to mark the newly enlarged confines of ancient Rome has been uncovered in the Italian capital, the first discovery of its kind in more than 100 years. The 6.2 feet high travertine marble stone dates to 49 AD, when Claudius expanded the official confines of the Pomerium, the sacred part of the city in which only Roman gods could be worshipped and no weapons could be carried. Expanding the Pomerium was a symbolic move, but also served to welcome new citizens, Claudio Parisi Prosecchi, head of Rome's archaeological museums, said in a press conference. The Senate bitterly resented the decision, he added, as they did not want to let in more foreigners. The so-called Pomerium marked the boundary between the historic city of Rome and conquered territory. It gradually expanded over the centuries, but historians are still unsure about its perimeter at the time of Claudius, who oversaw the successful colonizing of Britain, North Africa, and parts of the Middle East. The latest discovery could help dispel some of the mystery. It's like an extra piece of the jigsaw for the understanding of ancient Roman society, said Mr. Perez Presecci. The border stone was found half-buried during excavation work 1.5 months ago for the redevelopment of a piazza by the mausoleum of Augustus, some 3.5 meters below street level. After experts inspected it, it was dug out and temporarily moved to the nearby Ara Pacis Museum, which where it's put on display next to a copy of a statue of Claudius. Daniela Porro, a top conservation official who followed the excavation work, said, "Finding the stone where Claudius had originally ordered it was like seeing a thrilling testimony of the will of the emperor." The stone originally had a 9-line inscription, but only a few parts have survived. They introduce Claudius, list his titles and honours, and announce to posterity his decision to expand the Pomerium's borders, according to Mr. Prosecchi. The emperor had a reputation for being a ruthless, unattractive and unpredictable, but was also keen on history, dice playing and reforming Roman spelling. He had his 13-year rule cut short in 54 AD after being poisoned by his wife Agrippina and was succeeded by his adopted son, the infamous Nero. He is thought to have laid down more than 140 border stones around Rome, but only 11 of them survived, including this latest discovery. Some are held by the Vatican Museums, and 4 have been left in their original location. This new one will eventually be displayed inside the Mausoleum of Augustus, which reopened in March after a £15 million restoration. And finally, little Johnny was in church getting restless as Pastor Jamie's sermon dragged on and on. Not able to take it any more, he leaned over to his father and whispered, "Hey Dad, if we give him the money now, will he let us go?"
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.